obviously goes in a lot more detail than he's able to today. Shot of faith to the head. Be a confident believer in an age of cranky atheists. It's a really good book, and it's really, really well written. It takes a lot of, you know, sometimes very difficult ideas to wrap your head around, and makes it very, very clear. And this is the Newton book, Isaac Newton. I haven't read this one yet. I really want to read it now. Things get slow later. I might start, but no. I think things will be great. But this is definitely on my list to read. But Mitch, would you come? And we'll have, like I said, we'll have two more lectures this afternoon and some Q&A. So some people have already given me some more questions. If you have questions, make sure I get the card. Okay.
All right. So this is going to be, the real chore is going to be able, how do I keep you awake? This is the after lunch. Now how am I, and you probably wonder how I'm going to stay awake. If you see me nodding off, let me know. All right, remember where we were. We've been talking about the three main objections to belief in God. The first one we dealt with in terms of, you know, belief in God is irrational. Then we've turned now to the second one, the claim that science has shown that God doesn't exist. And actually, the questions really are interlinked, because the very reason that people would say that belief in God is irrational has to do with aspects of the 1700s, the Enlightenment. Well, that was caused by the scientific revolution of the 1600s. So it's really all of a piece, but we're kind of artificially handling it in separate pieces. So anyways, we talked about Galileo, learned a little bit about him, learned a little bit about Newton, and now what I want to do is talk more about science proper and about how science knows things. How does it, you know, can science really even show that there's no such thing as God? Can it say anything one way or another about God? So this talk, what we'll do now, this one I've entitled, Does Science Care About God? And really what I mean is, think of it this way, is science theologically neutral? Do beliefs about God matter for science? And does science say anything about God? So here's how I want you to picture this. If I had a whiteboard, I would draw it out. But I want you to picture science as this box, okay? So inside the box, you got scientists doing whatever scientists do. On this side, coming in, you have beliefs, you know, other beliefs that the scientists have before they enter into the laboratory or whatever. You know, so they have beliefs. You know, every scientist has beliefs before they begin their scientific studies or enter the laboratory or whatever. Now, one of the questions is, can those beliefs, particularly whether or not they believe in God, affect what goes on inside the science box? Well, there's two things. There's can it and should it? You know, if you can, should it? Okay, that's the one question. The other question is this: you got this, what's going on in the science box? Does anything that goes on in the science box, anything that we learn from science, give us an output that tells us something about God, one way or another? Okay, so that's the output. So the input: do beliefs about God affect science? Does science affect beliefs about God? So just kind of keep that in mind. If you keep that picture in mind, you'll know which side we're on as we go through it. Let me tell you a story. This was actually in Christopher Hitchens. He passed away a couple of years ago. He was a very outspoken atheist, English reporter. He has a book, God Is Not Great. And in this book, he says, look, I can tell you exactly when belief in God became irrelevant. I mean, he was saying this kind of tongue in cheek. He knew it wasn't exactly this moment, so I'm not saddling him with that. But he did say, look, I can tell you when belief in God became superfluous. It was back in, the beginning of the 1800s. I think that's when it was. You had Pierre Laplace. He was a French mathematician physicist. And he wrote this big, ginormous book on celestial mechanics. Basically, what he was doing is taking Newton's work and pushing it down the field and doing some outstanding things in terms of physics. So Pierre Laplace, he hands his book, he goes to meet Napoleon, the Emperor, Napoleon Bonaparte. So he hands them, you know, as a gift, this celestial mechanics, this huge book. And Napoleon says this, French again, Monsieur, just imagine a French accent as he says this, Mr. Laplace, they tell me that you've written this big book on the universe and you don't mention God in it once. And Laplace says, sir, I have no need of that hypothesis. Bam, that's it. That's the moment. And basically what Hitchens is doing is using that as kind of this illustration of what happened. Here's what happened. Here's how belief in God became irrelevant. Science showed that you don't need God to talk about the universe. The universe is completely self-subsistent. You can ignore all that now. Laplace just showed it. So that's basically the inference there. You know, those are the reasons. You know, Hitchens is saying, see, and I can point to, and we just get this more and more and more, says Hitchens, down as you go through history, you just have science showing that God gets pushed out. You know, every time there's something we think that science is, something in the world we think God is doing, science goes and shows that it wasn't really God, it was just the world. Again, see, where are your reasons? Where's your evidence for God? That's the whole thing. So we want to look at, okay, let's see exactly what's going on here. What's the claim? Why would you think, is this really the case, and if not, why is it not the case? Obviously, you know the upshot. You know I'm going to say that's not the case. So really the question is, well, why is it not the case? Okay. I'll throw out this one term. It's a technical term, but it's something that we just need to get used to. First of all, it's called naturalism. And basically, it's the view that there is the only thing that there is the natural world. So naturalism is basically a form of anti-supernaturalism. Naturalism just says, look, there's nothing supernatural. Okay, so naturalism is that we're going to be throwing that word around a lot. Now, there are two kinds of naturalisms. One is just the old-fashioned philosophical naturalism that says basically what you would think it says. There is nothing but the natural world. That's just straight, no chaser naturalism. But we usually call it philosophical naturalism as opposed to something called methodological naturalism. Okay, I won't be throwing anymore at you, but those two terms are very crucial, philosophical naturalism and methodological naturalism. Now, the methodological naturalism has to do with the methods of science. This is where it comes in for us. Let's step back and say, all right, how do scientists do what they do? What are they doing? How do they do it? You know, what tools are they working with? What is it that's so special about science that would show, you know, I mean, like, how's it different from being a car mechanic? I mean, I haven't heard anybody go, you know what? I've heard that auto mechanics shows that God doesn't exist. You know, the discipline of auto mechanic, you know, you have all these trade schools, and they're just showing you that left and right that there is no God. Well, why wouldn't that? What's the difference between, you know, what is it about the method of science that seems to say that there's know God. Well, this methodological naturalism is supposedly how science is supposed to be practiced, right? I mean, you have doctors who practice certain ways. You have scientists who practice certain ways. There's just kind of this code of ethics. Well, methodological naturalism is the standard view about how you practice science. What you do in methodological naturalism is while you are, even if you're a Christian, you're a scientist, you're a Christian, you put on your scientist hat, you go to work, that's a different you. You pretend while you have that science hat on that you're also an atheist. In this sense, I mean, you can pray to God all you want, but as you're practicing science, you don't make reference to God. You don't say God did this or God makes gravity. You don't make reference to God in your scientific theories. That's methodological naturalism. As a method, you pretend that that naturalism is true. Okay, and that's just it. It's as simple as that. Just pretend while you have your science hat on, when you formulate scientific theories, no God. Now, here's the thing. Methodological naturalism doesn't say that you cannot believe in God. It doesn't say that you can't have a quiet time at lunch. It doesn't say that you can't pray about your lab results, you know, that you're going to, your experiment or whatever. Pray that the pressure relief valve works well so the thing doesn't explode in your face. You know, whatever it is, you can do all that. That's just not part of your scientific theory. Don't mention it. Just keep it in your head or in your heart. Okay? So another way of saying this is science, just the standard way that it's supposed to be practiced, science is to be theologically neutral. Okay? Incoming beliefs, nothing about God. Outgoing beliefs, you know, when the stuff, science can't say anything about God coming out. The United States, the U.S. National Academy of Science, this is basically their official view. I'll give you a quote. Here's what it says. Science is a way of knowing about the natural world. It's limited to explaining the natural world through natural causes. Science can say nothing about the supernatural. Whether God exists or not is not a question about which whether God exists or not is a question about which science is neutral. So notice there, I mean, this is a tolerant view, right? This is just a view where it's like, look, hey, the National Academy, we're not saying that there's no God. We're not saying one way or another. That's just not what we do as scientists. Okay, that's something entirely different. So let's just separate the two disciplines and keep them separate. The late Stephen Jay Gould, he was a Harvard, I think he was a paleontologist, passed away a while back. He was all for this separation. I mean, he was an atheist and fairly adamant, but he was still for this separation. He says this, to say it from, I guess he got, some other atheists didn't like him saying this, so he kind of got pushed on this, and I think he was a little antsy when he wrote this. He says, to say it for my colleagues and for the umpteenth millionth time, science simply cannot, by its legitimate methods, adjudicate the issue of God's possible superintendence of nature. We neither affirm it nor deny it. We simply can't comment on it as scientists. He called this, he had this, I don't know how this would be helpful. Maybe it is helpful because I remember it. This, an acronym, NOMA, Non-Overlapping Magisterium, which just means like the separation of science and theology. Look, those disciplines do not overlap. So here it is. The picture is this. The scientist, the view is whether or not, I can see there's a kernel of truth in here somewhere, and we'll talk about that in a moment. You got a believer and an unbeliever side by side in a lab. They look at the meter, They both see it's between 2 and 3. It's not like one doesn't know that it's between, you know, I mean, that, here's what the non-overlapping magisterium says. Here's what the separation of religion and science say. Whether or not a person is a believer, a scientist is a believer or an unbeliever, it doesn't matter. They're going to come out with the same science. Just like if a mathematician who's a believer and a mathematician who's an unbeliever, they're going to get the same, if they do their math right, they're going to get the same mathematical answer. Okay, that's kind of the point. That's really what they're alluding to. Now, here's another worry too. This is more of a background. This isn't so much telling you, explaining the situation anymore. You know about the situation. It's supposed to be a separation. But why? I mean, you know, what's the big deal? Well, part of the problem is what unbelievers, and I think believers too, can be concerned about, is that if you refer to God in a scientific theory, it stops science. So God is a science stopper. You say, oh, what causes gravity? God. What caused that cancer? God. What caused that bird to have this sort of structure in its wings? God. That's the concern. That's the concern. It's like, look, that's not the kind of answers science is looking for. And if you have those sorts of answers, you've stopped science. Now, I just want to say this as in passing. It does sound silly when you put it this way, but what if the ultimate cause of something really is God? I mean, don't you want the truth? You know, what if, say, you're going back to the beginning of the cosmos, and in the beginning of the cosmos, the first cause really is God, and that's part of your scientific theory because it's part of your cosmology. And what if it's the truth? And you just have to go, well, we got our answer. Let's assume that it's just right. I mean, boom, God did it. We've got our answer. Science has stopped there. You stopped asking what caused the universe. What's wrong with that? It seems like really all science should be after is the truth. But not only that, isn't every answer that you accept, every explanation, a science stopper? Regardless if it's God or not. Like whatever, no, you know, whatever you say, if you say this bit of electromagnetic radiation caused this sort of defect or something like that, didn't you answer what caused the defect? And now don't you stop and you move on? So every single explanation that you accept, no matter what it is a science stopper. You stop looking for your keys when you find them, right? That's it. You're done. So every theory that everyone accepts has stopped science. Isn't that kind of the goal? Don't you want to stop science at certain points? I mean, you want to keep answering other questions, but you want to get to an endpoint on some of your questions too. So here's the point. The point is science stopper, that's neither here nor there. The real question is whether or not God is the cause of this or that event. That's the question. Okay, a lot of times the science stopper will be thrown out saying, look, man, science, I mean, God, belief in God or allowing God into your scientific theories is going to give you bad science because it's going to stop your scientific theorizing. Now, of course, you know that it could, but just anything could stop. Let's say I was an unbeliever. I believed in purely naturalistic evolution. Okay? Biological evolution. And you, amazingly complex organisms, right here, you aren't evidence for divine design. You're evidence that the laws of physics are such that they produce, and the laws of chemistry produce organisms like you. There, I've done it. I've just stopped. That's where it usually stops. It's a brute fact that the laws of physics are responsible for biological evolution. Laws of physics and chemistry. That's the fundamental thing. And there you go. You're done. And that's the standard story. But, you know, you might complain. I mean, I do complain that I don't know if that's really, I mean, is that a better stopping point than saying that God does, you know, going back and saying, you know, I mean, my question would be, if I were an unbeliever, why are the laws of physics such that the laws of biology are such that they produce you? And with random mutations and all of that stuff. I would just back it up again. But they're not backing it up. They're stopping science with the fact that physics produced it. Well, if I say God designed it or physics is just that way, those are both equally stoppers. The question is, what's the truth? So again, it just goes back to truth. And some of these are red herrings to kind of get us chasing something that shouldn't be chased. At the same time, I want you to always remember this, there's almost in every single point that someone makes who disagrees with you, almost all the time, unless they're little kids, there's some kernel of truth to it. Okay? And so what you need to be able to do is state what that kernel of truth is in the other person's position, as well as state your own clearly and state what's wrong with theirs. Okay, you need to be able to state what's right. You know, what's the point? They're not, usually people aren't just entirely insane. Okay, so the official stance apparently is that science is neutral, theologically speaking. Well, someone like Richard Dawkins, he's a biologist, Oxford. I think he was just voted, and I'm not sure who voted on this, the greatest world intellect or something to that effect. Well, he says, look, no, they are not, science is not theologically neutral. Science shows that God doesn't exist. And he says this, he gets mad at Gould, who's also an atheist. Both of these guys are atheists. He says this, despite the confident, almost bullying tone of Gould's assertion, what actually is the justification for it? Why shouldn't we comment on God as scientists? I mean, there does seem to be something. This will be one of those areas where I tend to agree with Dawkins. Yeah, you're going to see, I don't think that science is theologically neutral and that science can tell us things about God, and our beliefs about God affect what kind of science we produce. Another physicist, we were just actually mentioning, Eric mentioned him to me, Victor Stenger, he says this. He thinks that he too agrees that science shows that God doesn't exist and that the National Academy of Sciences are just being cowards. He says, look, it's just a pragmatic move to avoid conflict with the majority of ordinary citizens who are believers. So you see, there's different people have different views about whether or not God, you know, God matters to science and vice versa. Well, let's talk about this methodological naturalism. Let's talk about this theological neutrality. I mean, is science theologically neutral? And if it's not, if we're somehow being biased by science, should we be? Well, let me give you at least, let's see what the kernel of truth is behind this methodological naturalism first before we disagree with it. You know, there's a sense in which, let's say I take my car to a mechanic. And why aren't the brakes working? God's sovereign, and God caused them to stop working. Here's how I'm gonna fix it. I'm gonna fix it by, I'll pray for a while, and then go work on some other stuff. And hopefully by lunch, God will have fixed this. Your brakes. I mean, you know that's not That obvious, just giving that example answers the question. You don't. There's a sense in which, there's a legitimate sense in which being a car mechanic can be, I wouldn't say neutral, but it's not going to depend on God in the way that they're talking about. Right? You want the mechanic to find out, that's not the question you're asking. Yes, you're right, God's sovereign and all that, but I want to know more of a proximate cause. What's the closer cause for the brakes not working? And then I want you to fix that. I mean, you can pray all you want. I mean, I hope you'd pray and, like, God, give me wisdom to fix this and not cut off a finger and all those things. You know, pray for those sorts of things. But so there's this sense, and this is the sense that they're trying to get to, or they seem to. There are certain kinds of things that science does that aren't the kinds of things that beliefs about God affect, at least in that proximate. Now, I don't think that anything's hermetically sealed off from God, so I don't. But as far as you can see the point here, you know, you got two. Again, you have two students, one a believer, one an unbeliever. They've got a math quiz. They can both do math exactly. They do it exactly the same way. The believer can be worse at math or better at math, and it doesn't matter, you know, all things being equal. All right? You see where what their point is. Then here's another consideration. So there's a little bit of a consideration in favor of methodological naturalism. Here's another one, and this is basically just kind of supporting the same thing. Science should just basically, look, it has certain tools, just like a mechanic has certain tools that he uses. A farmer has certain tools. A carpenter has certain tools. An engineer has certain. Scientists have certain tools at their disposal, and they should stick with those tools. So you get in the scientific, and this goes back to Galileo again. You may think that, oh, wow, this guy, he found out something, you know, he discovered Galileo. Next thing you know, Galileo's ghost is everywhere. Or Newton. All of a sudden, he does a little studying on Newton, and Newton's everywhere. Trust me, I do not try to find Newton or Galileo places. Those guys just keep showing up. Now, the scientific revolution, remember what Galileo did. Galileo said, look, nature's, I don't have any instruments to work on those. Maybe someday. But I do have observation, experiment, and mathematics. Newton said basically the same thing. He sticks to, like when he's talking about gravity, even when it comes to something like gravity, he doesn't even say what causes it. He says this. He has a famous saying. He says, I feign no hypotheses. He's like, dude, I'm not going to make something up. I have no idea what causes it. But what I will tell you is here's how objects behave, and here's the force that's produced with this mass and all of that. I can tell you how objects behave, and I can mathematically describe, but I can't tell you what causes gravity. All right? That's because experiments don't tell them. Observation doesn't tell him, and mathematics doesn't tell him. So he just says, I'm not going to, you know, I can only do what I can do. I'm going to stick. And it helps to know your limitations, right? Like if you had, you know, if you wanted to use, you know, let's say, you know, you just got a new battery-powered drill, and you just cannot wait to use it. And so you look for projects around the house in which you can use this tool. Now, if you don't know the limitations of your tool, you're going to do all kinds of stupid things. You need to know, look, this guy, this, you, no, not a hammer, not a saw, maybe a doorstop. But there are certain things that, there are certain limitations that your tools have. And you better know what those limitations are. That's just practical. So that's just the better part of wisdom. When it comes, let's go back to Laplace. So you have Laplace saying that, look, sir, I have no need of that hypothesis. Now people like Carl Sagan, or he's dead too. I might mention that there will be some live, Victor Stenger, he's still alive, some living atheists. Carl Sagan called it the God hypothesis. Well, Laplace said he had no need for it. Okay. For what? Here's what he meant. And if he didn't mean this, here's certainly what he could have meant. Look, in order to describe mathematically the behavior of planets and stars and whatever, I just didn't need to refer to God. It's a mathematical equation. Maybe it's related to God because that's just showing God's mathematical nature and all of that. But I just didn't mention him because that's not what I needed. That's not what I was doing. There's a perfectly relevant sense in which Laplace, and looking back, this is what he meant. I just don't need that for this project. And again, going back to someone who builds you they build you a table, and you say, look, I don't see any mention of God here anywhere on the table or anywhere on the invoice or anything like that. I mean, that would be, the carpenter said, I have no need of that hypothesis, though I prayed about it. But so you see what's going on. You can see at least something of why methodological naturalism could be a good idea and why people would say, yeah, okay. Even Christians would say, yeah, let's just stick to the methods of science. So now the question is science theologically neutral? I think it's impossible to stick to this neutrality. I think methodological naturalism is impossible, and that's just because, look, physics and science in general goes deep. And this is God's creation. I'd be surprised if you could keep it out. If you want a worldview, you want a science, you're going to have to bump into God somewhere. So think about evolution. Let's think about how. Okay, you have the science box. You go in, and let's say it's you and an unbeliever. You go in and you look at the evidence, and here's the evidence for evolution. And so you've got this choice to make. You've got an option here. You could say, perfectly, and let's eliminate theistic evolution, okay? We'll keep that off the table to just make things simple. Now, pure, blind, mechanical, accidental, biological evolution. You're just pure accidents. The other way to explain you is divine design. Accident, evolution, blind design. Now, let's say you're an atheist, the choice is really, really easy. The design option's out of the question because to you there's no divine designer. So what are you going to go for? The best thing you got going right now, which is blind evolution. So you choose that. But suppose that you're a believer. What are you? You have more options open to you, right? You can choose the divine design. The beliefs that you're coming to science with include your belief about God. So that's going to affect whether or not you think that divine design, mechanical evolution, is really how you got here. And let's say you were like, I don't know. I don't know if there's a God or not. You still might have options. But once you say, no, I don't, the point is simply your beliefs about God affect your choice in scientific theory. Now, that's an obvious example. But you can see why atheists will look at evolution and hold it so vehemently. That's the only option. You're a little more desperate if that's your single choice. So it looks like beliefs coming in affect what goes on inside the science box. Take psychology. There's something called the problem of altruism, just being giving of yourself and being kind to others and sacrificing for others. It's the problem of why Mother Teresa was so nice or whatever. And there's a psychologist or cognitive scientist, I'm not sure exactly what but his evolutionary explanation for altruism was this. People who practice altruism, who give up for others, sacrifice their well-being for the sake of others, suffer from two things: docility, and these are just fancy terms, docility and bounded rationality, which really what he means by docility is that people just will believe they're gullible and they're easily led. So then the whole religion thing has taught them to go against their natural tendencies and sacrifice for people. So they're docile. The other thing that Herbert Simon says, he's not a believer, by the way, the other thing is that these people suffer from bounded rationality, which just means is they're not too bright. They don't realize that it's not in their best interest to refrain, at least typically, refrain from altruistic acts. If Mother Teresa knew what was best for her, evolutionarily speaking, she would have quit the nunnery, she would have gotten right to work on getting married, having children, and all that, and just creating as much progeny as you can. That's the goal. That's what Herbert Simon says. Now, here's the scientific theory, the possibility. The problem of altruism is that, the solution is docility, bounded rationality. What am I going to do? As a believer, would I choose that? Would I think that's an... Well, on atheism, that makes sense. It is kind of like, wow, man, these guys are just fooling themselves thinking that there's meaning anywhere. They're giving up their lives for others, and a lot of times they're doing it and it doesn't benefit them at all. They're just getting duped. And that makes perfect sense in an atheistic view, but not on a Christian view, right? No serious Christian is going to take that solution seriously. So again, beliefs about God affect what goes on inside the science box. Science can't be, at least in those cases, science isn't theologically neutral. There are other things, too, that seem to require the very practice of science. And you might think of it this way. The way science works, what we can learn from it, beliefs that come out of that science box say something about God. For example, and some of these are subtle. I mean, some of these they're straightforward, like whether or not, that there's an actual cosmos, so or there's actual design. It looks like there's been a designer. But think about this. Just the nature of the world being rational at all. This is a hard sell. We're so used to the world being rational that it's hard for us to go, dang, that is strange. It's just not strange to us, but it should be. It's not something that can simply, it just is a given. So the very fact that the world is rational and orderly, that science is possible, that the things that we do in science are possible, seem to scream out some sort of divine design. Now, someone like Stenger says this. He says, science doesn't need the assumption that nature is ordered and rational and intelligible. Rather, our confidence in science is based on its practical success, not some logical deduction derived from dubious metaphysical assumptions. So anyways, all he's just saying is, look, you don't need to assume that the world is rational in order to do science. That's neither here nor there. He's just saying he doesn't see how, he's like, I don't think about it, so I can still do science. We're talking about inferences you make from science, what science tells us about. Does science produce any belief about God downstream? Well, the Nobel laureate physicist Eugene Wigner says this. He said, and I don't think he was a believer at all, "It is not at all natural that the laws of nature exist, much less that man is able to discover them." I mean, this is a huge mystery. Einstein says this: "The fact that the world is comprehensible is a miracle." Einstein knew a lot, of philosophy. He knew Immanuel Kant and a lot of the late 1800s, early 1900s philosophers, and but a lot of scientists don't know their philosophy. The other thing, another way that science seems to suggest or say something about the existence of God is this: the very fact that we can use mathematics. This is related to the rational aspect of it, but mathematics is taking us in directions that our senses just can't go. It's mathematics and physics is kind of like our seeing eye dog, and we trust it. But mathematics is something that man developed and does with his mind. And that's allowing us to navigate the subatomic world. Assuming these theories are correct, allowing us to do all manner of things. Wigner, again, going back, he calls this the unreasonable effectiveness of mathematics. It just doesn't make sense. He says it's a gift that we don't deserve, nor do we understand it. So here it is. This is, it looks like, when you take this box of science, it looks like beliefs coming in, beliefs that beliefs about God that the scientist has affects how the scientist works inside the box. Also, what goes on inside the box can affect beliefs outside the box. So it can say things. So science listens to beliefs about God, and it says things about God. So at the very least, it doesn't seem like it's theologically neutral. It doesn't seem like methodological naturalism is anything. It's just simply not possible. So to even say, is it desirable? You know, I don't know, but it must not be, because it's not possible, at least with the science that we're currently enjoying. So think about it. So can science show that God exists? Well, here's the thing. It can say something about God one way or another. It's not theologically neutral. So now we haven't said, okay, well, now what is it? Has science shown that God doesn't exist? I mean, I think the whole, just even a cursory look at some of the theories. Stenger, for example, points out that, at least as far as we know now, current biology is based on physics and chemistry. And the physics and chemistry, well, we don't know why it's the way it is, it just is. It's kind of self-organizing, he calls it, he says. So physics is self-organizing. You know, here it is. I think, and this is the big thing, the world, you can get out of this argument, no doubt, but the world just downright screams design. It's not knockdown, drag. I mean, you can get out of the argument if you're willing to make the requisite contortions. But there's a lot going on there. But anyways, but we're really not talking about that right now. We're just saying, look, science is not theologically neutral. It says something. It listens to science. You can't go, hey, you know, I mean, a Christian science is going to look different than an unbelieving science if followed to its conclusion. So they're just going to be different beasts, because they have different beliefs. Okay. Thank you.
10 minutes, and then we'll come back for the next lecture. Okay.